as we start, we've just heard the story Jesus told about a lost sheep.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a time in your life when you felt like a lost sheep?
Yeah, I was thinking about that and remembered when I was quite a small boy, going to the seaside. It might have been Bank Holiday Monday because there was vast crowds on the beach and it was a wonderful day. And I hadn't been there long when I felt the urgent desire for an ice cream. So I said to Mum, can I go and get an ice cream? And she said, well, yes, but come straight back. She gave me the money. I went up to the prom to buy my ice cream from the ice cream van. And when I turned around to come back, I couldn't work out where they were. It was just a sea of people everywhere. I began to look and couldn't find them. I began to feel a rising sense of panic, thinking, I'm lost. My family are gone. I'm abandoned, stuck here forever. And so I began to run in my panic. And I looked down and my ice cream had leapt out of the cone. And so it was a double catastrophe. I was lost and the ice cream was lost as well. And that's when I began to cry. And the lady came and said, are you lost? And I said, yes. And she took me to the lost child's office. I don't know whether they have those nowadays at the seaside, but they did in those far-off days. And an announcement was made on the tannoy. Little lost boy called Ian. Does he belong to anybody? Would his mum come and collect him? And I thought I was in trouble for getting lost, but when Mum saw me, she was so overjoyed and relieved to see me. She swept me up into her arms, and it was wonderful to be found again.
Beautiful. Now, of course, the question that everyone's thinking is, did you get another ice cream?
Do you know, I can't remember. I think I would have asked for another one.
But isn't that lovely that the abiding memory is your mum sweeping in her arms and you being found again, rather than you got another ice cream or not. Ian, it's been so lovely over the last 6 months to welcome you in this church. Ian joined us in January from Sheffield, and you are one of our associate ministers. And today is a significant day for you. When we were talking about planning this day, Ian sort of quietly slipped in that today, I think it's to the day, you mark 50 years in ministry.
That's true. 50 years ago today.
So I thought we just got to use that opportunity to talk with you about 50 years of being a pastor. Yeah. Now, those of you who've got any school Latin, anyone? Do you know what pastor actually means? It means shepherd, of course it does. That's where we've got the shepherd's staff that the bishops have, because it's the sign of a shepherd. And so for 50 years, you've helped to look after the flock, after the people who follow Jesus, but also together with the flock to go out and to look for those who may be lost, like you were as a little boy, lost in various ways. Any particular memories of that particular day, 50 years ago?
I remember being really nervous, 22 years of age, going up to Doncaster to begin my ministry as assistant pastor of what was quite a large church. The Sunday evenings were big in those days. The Sunday evening congregation was around 350 people, on Sunday morning about 250. And so I came along as assistant minister. The senior minister was called Thomas Becket. He was never the Archbishop of Canterbury. He wasn't at odds with the king, and he wasn't cut down by sword in front of the altar. But that was his name, Thomas Becket. And he was a wonderful fatherly pastor of 63. I was 22, he was 63. And so I began my ministry feeling somewhat nervous. Early days, he said to me, I want you to preach regularly on the Sunday evening. That was very frightening. It was the biggest event of the week. And he wanted me, he said, I like to, and it had a missional emphasis to Sunday evening, and he liked to preach to the family of the church on a Sunday morning. So I got the Sunday evening spot. And I used to work hard at getting my sermon ready, from Monday morning onwards, reading and writing and praying until everything was written down, a really full manuscript. But by the time it got to Sunday night, I didn't really need the manuscript. I had the notes with me, but I'd kind of learned it all that I had to say. And I went also to look after the youth works. I was the youth pastor as well. So I know you would never imagine it now, but I was a youth pastor, 22-year-old, fresh-faced, incredibly handsome young man, setting up to do this amazing work. But one thing that came to me really forcefully was the incredible privilege that God gave me, and that has never left me in 50 years of ministry, the awesome privilege of caring for the flock of God and being part of the task, the joyous task of ministering to God's people.
Wonderful. Do we think he still is handsome? Look at his shirt. Brilliant.
Well, I'm just trying to stay as cool as Namdi, but I know I'm never going to quite get there, but keep trying.
Well, we're going to come back to Doncaster in a moment.
Right.
But talking about you being a youth pastor, you and your family then went to North Wales.
Yeah.
Was it Prestatyn?
To Prestatyn. Prestatyn. Yeah.
And as it happened, your job was going to be there as well, although you were the main minister there.
Yes, I was.
Because you were still reasonably young, you had a young family, they thought you the right person to look after the young people.
Yeah.
However, tell us what happened.
I was following a man called Warwick Shenton, who had an incredible reputation for youth ministry, but essentially he'd struggled to bring together a very small group of young people. He'd worked very hard to encourage them. So I arrived in this September. By the end of the year, they'd all gone. They'd all left the church. And I stood up at the annual reports meeting, the sort of annual general meeting, and said, well, I'm really sorry to tell you, you've observed for yourself that I've lost all the young people from this church. And one of the ladies said to me, listen, she said after the service, don't feel guilty about those young people going. It was only Warwick's really hard work and care and perspiration that kept them in the church anyway. Why don't you just work on the young people? I've got my daughter, Janine. You can, and she'll bring her friend, and you can begin with them. So we did that. On a Sunday evening after the service, those two came to our house. Then others of their friends came to the Sunday evening service and on to our house afterwards. Within a very short period of time, a few years, we'd moved house to a bigger house. And on a Sunday evening after the service, all the young people came back to our house. The lounge was full. The dining room was full. There were people sitting on the stairs, going up the stairs. People hanging around outside if the weather was good. It was just packed with 50 or 60 young people, and that became the basis of an ongoing ministry. And then we had youth workers that came to help us, and it was incredibly encouraging, the way that things developed amongst the young people.
Yeah, beautiful. Mm. And one of the things I find so encouraging here is that we've begun to invite all ages to be part of this church family. And it's so wonderful today. Some of you are here today who received a letter because you've had a baptism of your child here over the last 3 years in this church. We begin with the people who come, and we can begin to build this church family. And then we trust God that he will continue to build this church family as people grow older, as newborns arrive. We've just had a new baby, a new church baby. Some of you know Pete and Jen Kruk, and they've just had a little baby a couple of days ago. And we build this family where all ages have their place. Mm. And so as a church in the next years, this is something we want to lean into. God has put it on our hearts to be the family of Jesus together, all ages. On the 28th of September this month, on a Saturday, we are inviting everyone to come to a day at St. Mark's and to think and pray and talk. What that means, that we are the family of Jesus together, all ages. And flowing out of that, we trust that God will help us to do just that. Mm. And that is so exciting.
Yeah.
One of the things we are going to do very practically as part of that is A bit like today, we're going to develop always the first Sunday of the month to make that special for all ages, for younger people especially to take an active part in the service. And so our next service like that will be the Harvest Sunday, the 6th of October. And we hope you'll be part of that again. And we can express what it means to be the family of Jesus together. Well, let's go back to Doncaster.
Okay.
You returned to Doncaster about 25 years later.
I did, yeah.
And you were a minister there. Actually, no, you became a chaplain in the prison there.
Yes, that's right.
And you told me it was very funny that one of the people who knew you from your time as an assistant minister 25 yeah. years earlier met you in prison again as an inmate.
Yeah.
And I believe he said to you, oh, you changed my life.
He did, yeah.
Well,
he said to me, he read my badge and he said, Ian Jennings. So I said, yeah. He said, not the Ian Jennings. So I said, yeah, but nobody's ever called me that before. He said, you were the assistant minister of the church at the end of Cleveland Street. I said, yes. He put it there. He said, you changed my life. So I thought, oh, isn't that wonderful? I hurried back to the office to tell my Methodist colleague, Tom. And so I said to Tom, oh, you'll never guess what. I met this guy, and my preaching changed his life. And he said, Ian, I have to point out, he's in prison.
And I guess if you're going to look for lost sheep, prison is probably a good place to start.
It really is, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about, because I know it was a time that you found very meaningful. Tell us about being chaplain to people in prison. Many of them probably knew they were a lost sheep in one way or another.
They really did. One thing about prison ministry is you don't need to spend a lot of time convincing people of their lostness and their need for forgiveness. They're aware of that. And those who come to chapel, a substantial, significant minority of prisoners come to know and trust in God and never return to offending patterns of behavior. And that's a wonderful thing to see. But it's not easy. Within the chaplaincy, we created what was a really caring community, and people came every day to the chaplaincy for care, for prayer, for help. And they said often, when I get out of prison, I'm going to find a church, become part of a church. I never want to come back to prison again. And my life is going to be different from now on. But often they did come back to prison. I remember one young man called Rick who is so determined. I'm going to find a church. I'm going to be part of a church. I'm going to grow as a Christian. But he was soon back inside. And I said, what happened, Rick? You were so determined to find a church. I did find a church, he said. And what happened? He said, I went along on Sunday, and in church, you go on a Sunday, and then they expect you to come back next Sunday. What are you supposed to do in between? That was when his life fell apart again, and those men needed the care, the love, the support, the encouragement, the teaching and training that was really part of their life 7 days a week. They needed that. Yeah.
And that's such a lovely model, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if we are the family of Jesus together,
yeah.
It doesn't mean we're just going to check in for an hour on Sunday.
No.
It means we support one another in our lives, in the various ups and downs. And that's a vision, I think, which is so precious and which is very pertinent for us, for any church,
yeah, sure.
Which we want to lean into in this church. You told me the story of Tommy, which was a success story.
Yeah.
Because he was a lifer.
Yeah, he was.
And he eventually came out. Mm. Tell us, he had a strategy, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He was a discretionary life sentence prisoner rather than a mandatory life sentence prisoner. Mandatory life sentence are given always for murder. Tommy wasn't convicted of murder, but of manslaughter. And he spent years in prison feeling utterly downcast and depressed because of what had happened in his life and because of what he had done. But then he came to faith in prison and began to learn and to grow in his Christian life. And when it came towards the end of his sentence, which was 14 years, his tariff, he decided that he would settle in Nottingham when he when he was released from prison. And so he wrote to a dozen churches in Nottingham to say, I want to settle in Nottingham. Can I be part of your church when I'm released? He explained about his life sentence, that he was a prisoner, but that God had changed his life. He was never going to come back to prison again. He had a new life in Christ. And could I join your church? And he told me, out of the dozen churches that he wrote to, several did not reply to his letter. Some replied and said, well, we're really sorry, we wish you well, but we don't feel that our church is the place for you. And he was telling me this, and I was saying, oh, Tommy, that is terrible, terrible. No, no, he said, it's wonderful, because I had one letter from one man who said, yes, absolutely, you can join our church. And what is more, I want you to begin to get to know the people before you're released, so people are going to write to you from the church. He came to visit. In fact, he came to the prison gates and said, I want to see this man who's written a letter to me. And you can't really do that, but somehow we managed to do that through the chaplaincy. He came in, saw Tommy, and welcomed him into his church family. When a prisoner who's serving life comes towards the end of their sentence, then they get home release. They get home release for weekends to get used to being back in the community. So Tommy was released to his new home, to his church family in Nottingham, where they welcomed him and loved him and supported him. So when he stepped out of prison, he went home to Nottingham, to the church that had already shown him so much care, and he was part of a family. So that was a really wonderful model of a church that worked, of pastoral care that was real, and of not somebody slipping through the cracks again.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's God's dream for all of us, that we find new life in Jesus, that we find this community who are family to us, no matter whether we are family ourselves, and that we can be family to the other people in the local church and walk with them Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Ian, thank you so much for giving us just a little bit of an insight.
Okay.
We want to mark this day, so a couple of things. The choir has a little something for you, and they're going to bring that forward. And also, we have commissioned a special mug for you, which isn't finished yet, so this is just an impression. It won't be quite that big. It says on the front, run the race with perseverance. And it will have a couple of trainers on there.
Okay.
And on the bottom of it, it will say, Reverend Ian Jennings, 50 years in ministry, 2019. And can I ask the choir to also present their gifts to you?
Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Robert. Bless you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.